the Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have John Wilner. This is the week of the Pac-12 and the deadline for San Diego State, also SMU. What happened with the Pac-12 and the NBA draft? I'll tell you, not much, which isn't good. But next year, could it be different with Bronny James at USC? We have plenty to chop up with John Wilner. And in particular, is this the week for expansion and the Pac-12 staying alive, staying afloat, as I believe that they will? There's a deadline of later this week. That's it for San Diego State to get out of the Mountain West Conference. Otherwise, it doubles for them to leave. And would the conference want to help them out? If you're a college football, college athletics fan, we will have John Wilner with us. The Mercury fired Vanessa Nygaard, and Ellie of Gabay has been all over this story and just actually doing a terrific job on the Mercury in general. And there comes a point, and I don't think today is the day for the discussion, but I'm looking at the Mercury at 2-10. This is a franchise that we have teams here, and I'm a little biased. I will say that up front. I am the original play-by-play voice, the Phoenix Mercury. All the way back in the late 90s, Jerry Colangelo called me and said, you know, you should do the Mercury. I'd like to have you be the voice of the Mercury. I said, heck yeah. I've got daughters, play basketball. This would be great. And so I saw that league from a different lens. And at one time, I did the Rattler games here in town. The Rattlers have their audience. The Mercury, I believe, have a bigger platform. It's nothing personal with the Rattlers. It's just the WNBA. The NBA is taking care of it. The Rattlers are pretty much on their own. So I've seen those sports. I've done the pros. I've done college. I've done high school. I've done it all. And the Mercury have a fan base that in this town is rabid. And for them to be as bad as they are, they have an aging superstar. We've seen aging superstars here in Phoenix, in Diana Taurasi. Brittany Griner is a free agent at the end of this season. There's some very good players that are coming out in this year's draft. And is it just time for the thing to implode? But you have a new owner. Jim Pittman does a great job as a general manager over there. But there's just a lot going on around the Mercury, and Eliev is all about it. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their ongoing support. Thanks to Jordan Hamm for last week sitting in. I had a great week. You know, we get busy in sports. We work nights, we work weekends, we work holidays. And I'm not looking for the little tiny violin. I mean, it's fun and games, but it's things you have to do. 40 years doing this. And when you push family to the margins, and I think we all do it, at least guys, I think you do it. You know, my lens growing up with a single mom, there are times where she had to go be at work and I had to figure it out as a kid. Part of the deal, part of my journey. But I have said, as my years have gone on, I've seen many people in this position that just don't have a life, and they wake up one day and say, yeah, I didn't take the time to go do this and do that, and I wish I would have. And fortunately, I had some mentors that got into me and said, you better pay attention to your family a little bit closer, because you're at a lot of things, you're going a lot of places, you're doing a lot of things in sports in your 20s, 30s, 40s. And I don't know, I just felt like I'm going to be all in on my family first. And it's been an adjustment. I have some people that say, you're working weird hours. Yeah, so you're at things. And I'm venting to you a little bit and opening up about it, because I think it's important that if you can mentor and be mentored at the same time in life, you're going to be in a really good place. Mentor someone, be mentored. Fortunately, right now I'm in that space. I've got some good mentors, and I think I'm helping some people out, including my own son. And so I took him on his college orientation. We went up to Fort Collins, Colorado. Colorado State's where he's going. He has a terrific major. He's so excited. He wish he would have stayed up there rather than drive back. Like, we went to Santa Fe, New Mexico and hung out. Went to this very nice restaurant. He's a foodie. He was talking about how great the food is. Our server brought over the owner. The owner gave him a card, said, stay in touch. We were talking about the desserts. The owner sent over some desserts that we didn't order. And it was just a beautiful time with my son. I take him up to Colorado State. We walk into orientation, and we're like a minute into it, he turns to me. He's like, you're good. You can go. All right, I'm out. And tooled around up in Colorado, up in Fort Collins, and then down in Denver. And we drove back down through Moab. You ever been to Moab? Moab's all right. It's not the end of the world. You can see it from there, maybe. I liked it. Drove down through Park City, down to Moab, spent the night there, drove through Monument Valley, went on the Forrest Gump Road, all that stuff. And I've got people text me about, can you believe Chris Paul? Can you believe what's going on with Chris Paul and how the Suns can disrespect Chris Paul? And I'm thinking, let's see, Chris Paul said he found out on a plane, because I didn't disconnect entirely. I'm present. Didn't disconnect entirely. So this whole Chris Paul thing last week, like, yeah, he was flying to be on Good Morning America. They don't fly on commercial, just so we're clear. So probably on a private jet, at worst, first class. It's not the worst. Oh, by the way, he gets now $30 million rather than 15. My son had to find out, you know, while it was tough, it was hard. Dad, you made $15 million because they traded you. Like, I was amused by all the overreaction. And you know what? If Isaiah Thomas, if by now we haven't come to realize that Isaiah Thomas is telling Matt Ishbia some things, then we just haven't been paying attention. He's been pretty out there. And oh, by the way, I'm not excusing this. Do you think this is the first time it's happened in sports where somebody's listening to somebody and telling them what to do just because they don't have a title? Like, it's really secretive? Come on. I know we need to fill hours and hours of programming in this day and age we're in, but most of it's pure crapola. Well, what if Isaiah is telling him what to do? Yeah, there's, I don't know, one time somebody told the Cardinals taking Matt Leinart was a good idea. It wasn't. Somebody told the Cardinals at one time taking Tommy Knight was a great idea in the first round. It wasn't. One time somebody told the Cardinals to take Leland McElroy in the first round and it was a good idea. And it wasn't. And I'm sure I could go on and on and on. You know, it's like the draft the other night. This team won the draft. Okay. That's great. So are you going to not even pay attention how the Suns passed not once, not twice, but three times on the Joker when he came out in the draft? And they took, did you see who they took and they passed on? So every year there's teams that take these guys, and every year, oh, it's fun. It's fun. No, it's dumb a lot of times. A lot of times. Like the Isaiah thing, am I to believe that Bradley Beal is going to be on the court for 70 games? I haven't seen it the last 4 years. Go look it up. Oh, but he's great. Look at these highlights. Look at this handle. Look at the impressions on our Twitter feed because we're showing all these great highlights. And like, that stuff doesn't mean anything. Can he play when we get to next April? Like trading Chris Paul should have happened. Should have had. Those of you that are in the Chris Paul, the Suns made a huge mistake. What? What are you missing here? It's great. He's one of the greatest guards of all time. But the last 2 years, he couldn't be on the floor when it mattered. I don't care how many games they win during the regular season. I don't know why that's so hard for people to understand. Is it really that hard to understand that the games in the NBA don't mean jack bleep? I mean, think about it. Miami, what record did they finish with? Where were they in the East? What happened? Okay? It doesn't matter what goes on. You just have to get in the postseason. It just doesn't matter. And so I had people text about this too. And with the NBA stuff, it's great. It's fun. This is the greatest time of year to be an NBA fan. Not the finals. Certainly not the regular season. There's two times a year where it's great. It's the trade deadline, the draft, and this week where free agency hits. That's it. The rest of the time, it's just, oh, he's the greatest. Oh, he's this. Did you see this last night? And it's, no, did you see the grind? Did you see the grind? Remember Chet Holmgren last year? What happened to Chet Holmgren? Oh, man, Chet Holmgren's going to be the greatest. He got broken too. So Wembanyama gets taken by San Antonio. And San Antonio, for some reason, this secret moat, drawbridge, fire-breathing dragon we're never going to show anything to anybody. They're showing Victor out with Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili, David Robinson and Sean Elliott. They're having dinner. And then they have fans come out. They're like, what is going on? This is San Antonio, the most secretive organization out there. What is happening? Chet Holmgren, broken too. Wembanyama, broken too. Maybe, maybe not. He's going to be in Sacramento for a, you know, summer league game. Great. You think the NBA wants him dinking around in summer league games? He'll play in Vegas for a game, maybe two, and that's it. He'll be gone. Got to keep our most valuable commodities out of harm's way. It's like preseason NFL football. The worst of the worst of the worst. I mean, I like what the Suns did with Bradley Beal and getting him. But nobody can sit here with a straight face and say this is the answer. Nobody. You may think you're right. I don't. I'm going to sit here and say if he makes it through the season and he plays 70 games and he's ready to go and there's some chemistry and camaraderie and all that stuff, or if he plays 15 games and it's March 20th when he starts the clock ticking, that's probably about right. 15, 20 games. That's it. What about Kevin Durant last year? It wasn't consistent. He gets hurt. He gets hurt. Stay back. Devin hurt. Kevin hurt. Kevin Durant's like 9-16 in his last 23 like. I don't have the exact number. I know it's a losing record the last 3 years of playoffs for him. So it all looks good. Oh, you're just hating on the Suns. No, I'm not. Being real, are they better than Denver today? No. Lonsdale probably played the Joker the best of any of the bigs. And that's, you know, go back and look. Go back and look in the Miami series. Go back and look in the Lakers series. Go back and see what happened when he was on the floor against Joker. And Denver's going to go through some change and transition. They win a title. They're going to lose some players, but they hit on some guys. It wasn't just the main dudes that they hit on. Obviously, the 41st pick overall ends up being a Hall of Famer, and they hit on that one in a big way. But are the Suns better than that? I don't think they are. All right. So here's the thing. Wilner is next, and then Eliav Gabay on the Mercury. And there's a lot that we get into on both fronts. And John Wilner, it's a big week for the Pac-12. If you're a college football fan, we're going to have a meat sandwich next with John Wilner. John Wilner is with us for a couple of minutes. Hopefully, John and I will not see each other for, I don't know. I mean, I like you. I love chopping it up on Mondays, but we need a break. And the 4th of July is next week. So let's just start there. Do you believe that this is the week, John? Because there's a hard deadline for San Diego State this week. I'll let you touch on that. But is this the week that conference expansion for the Pac-12 conference finally hits?
I doubt it. I wouldn't rule it out. But my guess is it's going to be the first 10 days, 2 weeks of July. And what that means for San Diego State and their exit fee, which is supposed to double after June 30th, I don't know. That's up to San Diego State and the Pac-12 to hammer out that, and the Mountain West to figure that out. But I do not expect the Pac-12 to announce something in the next 4 or 5 days. I do think July 21st is their football media day in Las Vegas. I do think it'll be done by then, because otherwise it's going to be a PR nightmare for the conference to have the media rights issue swallow up the football preseason event. But we'll see. It's sometime in the next 3 weeks, probably.
Okay, so the exit fee for San Diego State, it does go up. It doubles. You mentioned the Pac-12, and could they be involved in – they would not be involved. The presidents would not say, yeah, we'll help out with the exit fee cost, would they?
No, I wouldn't think they would do that, but I do think that there's ways they can, yeah. And I don't know if they're having these discussions, but San Diego State's, you know, they could front San Diego State some money, right? They agree on San Diego State's revenue share, right? I don't think they're going to come in at a full share. Let's just say each school, for sake of argument, $30 million for the Pac-12 in the next media deal. San Diego State isn't going to be getting $30 million. Maybe they come in at 25% first couple of years, then 50, something like that. But the Pac-12 could, you know, basically front them money off of the media rights payment in future years to help them pay their Mountain West exit fee potentially.
And do you know what the exit fee may even be about, John? Is there anything out there that you've been able to unearth? Like what's it going to cost for them to get out?
Well, their deal is it's three times the Mountain West's media payout, which is about six million, five and a half, 6 million. So that it's basically about 17 million if they announce that if they tell the Mountain West they're leaving by June 30th, it's about 17 million. If it's after June 30th, it doubles. So we're talking about 33, 34 million. So that's a lot. That's a lot of money for a school like that. And that's why they probably would either need the fronted some cash from the Pac-12 or negotiate that deal down with the Mountain West, or maybe their campus can lend the athletic department some money. I don't know. They're going to have to make that work.
Okay, so why would the Mountain West want to work with a team that is exiting?
They wouldn't, but you see all right. this all the time, right? The exit fees get negotiated down. The schools that are leaving the American for the Big 12, they negotiated down their fees. Texas and Oklahoma negotiated with the Big 12. So, you know, lawyers can do amazing things. And, you know, if San Diego State is leaving, the Mountain West is also going to want to get the, you know, get it done as quickly and clean as possible.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. SMU, are they in the same boat as San Diego State with their conference?
I don't know the details of their departure deadline, but they're going to owe, you know, probably something in the 20 millions, you know, based on what we saw with Cincinnati leaving the American for the Big 12. I think that SMU would be able to negotiate down, right? I think Cincinnati negotiated to 18 million, I want to say. My guess is SMU would look for a similar deal from the American, but SMU also has got a lot of money. Their donors, they got a lot of Texas Oil money there with their donors. It's a private school. It's a little bit like USC in those regards, you know, wealthy donor base at a private university. So I would imagine the exit fee is not going to be a problem for SMU. SMU, it would pay the Pac-12 to get in. They are desperate. And I have to imagine they will also come in at a lower revenue share, but they're not going to have the same issues as San Diego State in terms of paying the fee to their conference.
Okay, what's the 30,000-foot view on this from the people that you speak to that, you know, they're not as dialed in as you or other, some other national media types? Is this a big step back because, well, you're losing UCLA and USC and you're taking a private school in Dallas and you're taking San Diego State, which is landlocked out there? I mean, I've heard it both ways that this is a big blow to the Pac-12 if this does come to fruition. And then there's others that say, well, it's just the way we are now in this new universe of college athletics and there'll be more expansion departure to come.
It's the reality, right? It's the hand the Pac-12 has been dealt. And, you know, it lost the L.A. schools, which is, I mean, you can't replace them, right? You're talking about one of the most successful football teams at USC and one of the most successful basketball teams at UCLA in a massive media market. But so is it the best the Pac-12 could do under the circumstances? Yes, I think it is. There's no doubt about that. And I also think, look, it could be worse, too. San Diego State just played for the national championship.
Right.
In early April in basketball. And SMU is a chip that you play down the road. Right. You invite them and you hope that that wealthy donor base combined with the Dallas media market and recruiting market, you know, the recruiting pool of players there. Getting in the Pac-12 can elevate the football program. And so that in 5 or 6 years, SMU is a much more relevant football team than they are now. You're kind of it's a gamble on the future with SMU, whereas San Diego State is you the present, right? You know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, John, too, if SMU comes in and has success, let's just take University of Houston. Let's just talk about what is down the road to your point. Are other schools, other conferences, they're in other conferences saying, you know, that's turned out to be a pretty good deal for them and they're out here by themselves. We need to add one more. Is Texas Tech happy where they are? Sure seems like it, but that's in 2023. What's it look like in 2027, 2028, I think is your point.
Yeah, absolutely. SMU is a chip to play down the road for the media, because the Pac-12 is going to sign a media deal for 5, 6, 7 years. So somewhere around 2030, they're going to have to go back to the negotiating table. Mm-hmm. And if SMU is relevant in the Dallas market, that's a valuable chip when the Pac-12 renegotiates its media deal at the end of the decade. And then at that point, who knows, right? I mean, I don't know about Texas Tech necessarily, but certainly if SMU is relevant, then you start thinking about Rice. You start thinking about Tulane, because you got the Houston, you got New Orleans, right? You do see if there's a partner for SMU at that point. I don't know about Houston, if they'd want to leave the Big 12, you know, but we don't know. There's a lot of possibilities, and the situation is going to be very different in 2030 for all of college football than it is right now.
Is there buyer's remorse with USC and UCLA anywhere at all in all this?
Well, I don't think there's any buyer's remorse for USC. I do think that there's a lot of buyer's remorse at UCLA, you know, among fans. I've heard some of the coaches aren't happy about it. It's clear that some of the athletes are not happy about it. We'll see. I think it's possible that UCLA will have a serious case of buyer's remorse in 5 or 6 years, right? The newness of going into the Big Ten will have worn off. All the money isn't going to necessarily translate to victories for them. The travel is going to be a grind. Football has never been the biggest sport for UCLA. Now, does that mean that in 2030, they're going to want to get back in the Pac-12?
No.
I doubt that. Yeah. But I do think that of those two schools, much more chance of buyer's remorse for the Bruins. USC is gone. And, you know, in every sense of the word, they want to play on the same football platform as Ohio State and Michigan.
Sure, sure. But if you're the basketball program, which Andy Enfield has got Bronny coming in and Ellis coming back and all that in their final year, they look like a team that could really put some guys into the next level. But at the same time, it's the dead of winter and you're playing Penn State and Maryland and you're gone for a week and you're just, you know, you have to burn a whole day on travel each way. And that, I think, is something that people may look at just the games themselves, but the grind, John, I think, on athletes to go do that deal is going to be much greater than what people are even estimating at this point.
No, I totally agree with you. For basketball, men's and women's basketball, the Olympic sports, it will be a grind. The Big 10 is going to do its best to schedule in a way that limits the back and forth travel for the LA schools to the Eastern time zone. But it's still going to be a lot, and it will be a grind once the newness is worn off. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. But USC is the entire ethos of the athletic department and the school in some ways is wrapped up in football.
No,
and that will never, you know, when Ohio State comes through the tunnel at the Coliseum, when the Trojans come through the tunnel at the Big House in Ann Arbor, that will eliminate any sense of the buyer's remorse. UCLA is not the same, right? Because of where football stands there. So I think that's why there's more likely that the Bruins are like, gosh, you know, is this really the best thing for us long term?
Sure, because in basketball, UCLA basketball is the brand, and having Indiana run out of the tunnel at their arena, they could have done that anyways, you know, in basketball. They've done that. They've played Michigan in basketball. So in football, UCLA running out on the court at Indiana is kind of like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, they're totally different. The two cultures of the schools, you know, they're what, 5 miles apart, something like that. Everything about USC and UCLA is totally different. So I don't think eventually, you know, over time, they're going to respond the same way to being in the Big Ten.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, top five storylines for you. Pac-12 Media Day is next month. It's coming up right around the corner for fans. You can't wait to just talk about on the field. What are the five things? I hate doing lists, but I'm going to throw you a softball. I'm going to lob it up there. What are the five things that John Wilner is looking forward to hearing about at Pac-12 Media Day for the coming season?
Certainly what the vibe is with the two schools playing their last season. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that's going to be a topic no matter what happens, right? You know, and given, you know, all the expectations around USC for this coming season, to me, that's, you know, the LA schools kind of hanging over the proceedings is going to be unmistakable, right? I think it's going to be interesting to see what the coaches have to say. Is Deion Sanders going to completely command the event, right? I mean, that's an interview. Everybody getting him on the big stage there is going to be a huge event. I think the quarterbacks, right? What are the quarterbacks saying? That's the Pac-12 has the best lineup of quarterbacks in the country. You got the reigning Heisman winner, Caleb Williams, potential top pick. You've got other guys who are going to go be going after the Heisman. Bo Nix at Oregon, Michael Penix at Washington, Cam Rising at Utah. The playoff, can the Pac-12 get a team in the playoff? Finally, it's been, you know, last time it happened was 2016 with Washington. And also, will that playoff team be an LA school, right? I mean, think about the Pac-12. It's the last year of the LA schools, and the Pac-12 finally gets a team in the playoff, and it's not USC or UCLA. It's Oregon. It's Washington. It's Utah. That would be a huge boost for the conference, right? So that's – I think those are some of the things I'm looking forward to. You know, specifically Cam Rising, you know, Utah's quarterback there, the two-time defending conference champs. He's coming off an ACL in the Rose Bowl. Is he ready for the season to start? Because Utah starts with they start with Florida and Baylor. First two games. Those are huge games for Utah trying to get in the playoff. They're huge games for the Pac-12. Is Rising going to be healthy for those two? That I think that's a big issue in terms of injuries, personnel. That's the number one issue is Rising, the state of Rising's knee.
All right, let's move over to basketball. The draft just took place. Jaime Jaquez goes in the draft to Miami. Pac-12 just not have a good day, John.
Or no.
What do you make out of it?
Yeah, it's the only time since 2010 that they've only had one first-round pick, right? Not a good day. You know, there's a couple things to make out of it. One is that they got a lot of guys coming back who made all-conference, entered the, you know, tested the waters with the NBA draft, decided to come back to school. So there's a fairly stout lineup of returning talent. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's a bunch of, you know, five-star kids coming in. USC has got the number one recruit in the country, point guard Isaiah Collier. I would be very surprised if he's not a top 10 pick in the draft next year. You know, Arizona, Colorado, Oregon, they've all got some big time players coming in. Stanford. It looks to me like the talent from the draft next spring is going to be better than it was this spring. But it's also on the coaches. And, you know, I don't think Pac-12 coaching in basketball has done a very good job developing talent, making the most of what they've got. Pac-12, in terms of blue chip recruits, Pac-12's right there with the other power conferences. And yet you look at the on-court results and they aren't right there. And so that tells me the coaches aren't making the most of what they got. So a lot of it's on them. It's the same, except for Cal, it's the same lineup of coaches. We're getting year after year. And Pac-12 basketball just needs some kind of spark. And it doesn't really have that. So we'll see how things unfold in the fall and the winter.
Yeah, the spark is coming from San Diego State, which
was, could be.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and that's something that fans should be watching for this fall too. Is how are San Diego State and SMU going to do in football? Because if they both have good seasons, that, you know, puts a little, it sheds a little different light on the expansion front. Just like San Diego State looks a lot different now as an expansion target than it did before March Madness started, right? Now you're thinking, you know what? They're going to come in as maybe the second best program in the conference behind Arizona. And it looks a lot better. If the two football teams at SMU and at San Diego State do well this fall, that'll, you know, put things in a little bit different light.
I think bringing it closer to home, and I'll put a bow on it after this, it's, you know, Marcus Bagley came in with a lot of hype at Arizona State.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever came close. And Tabellus looked like somebody that was going to be a surefire first-round pick and then finishes out. He wasn't. Both of them are going to go to Philly. Both of them are on two ways. You know, I'll even go outside of the conference. Drew Timmy looked like somebody who's like, wow, he's going to be great. And he took a pay cut, essentially, by going to the NBA. And I guess, John, there's a lot of good-looking college players that aren't transitioning over to NBA players within the Pac-12. Take Timmy out of it, obviously, but you can build up, we can hype, we can write, we can talk about this player is great, this player is that, but they're just college guys. They're not NBA caliber players. And I think that Maybe that changes. Boogie Ellis looks like an NBA player to me at USC. Bronny James, don't know, a lot of hype. There's some people that say he's a second-round pick, but it's LeBron's kid who's going to be in the middle of the conference this year.
Yeah, it's a lot about player development. It's hard to know. You know, these kids are so young when they're committing to these schools, 17 years old. You just don't know. All right, you see the talent, but it's also about, you know, being focused and your work rate, staying out of trouble, staying healthy physically, staying healthy mentally. And, you know, the conference has struggled with a lot of kids the last few years. I think COVID probably had a lot to do with that. But, you know, you got to develop these guys. And then you look at Jaquez as the opposite. You know, he was a four-star recruit. He was like the number 10 player in California mm-hmm. in his class. And he goes 4 years. He works his tail off. He develops a nice all-around game. You know, he's not on the all-airport team, right? But the guy's the 18th pick in the draft because he worked hard and developed. And I think we need to see more of that at other schools with other coaching staffs than we have at a lot of places. You know, Oregon has had a lot of five-star guys come in lately that haven't developed. Arizona, you know, hasn't maybe pushed out as much talent as we would have thought. To Bellis, certainly you can see there's a few holes in his game. We'll see if – I think Arizona's got a couple of kids that have better chance to be first-round picks next year than To Bellis ever did, right? Boswell – Colin Boswell, their point guard, Caleb Love coming in from North Carolina. Those guys are you know, they're athletes in a different sense that maybe translates better to the NBA. But we'll see how the schools do. It's a lot of it is about development. It gets lost in all the hubbub about how many stars you've got.
Sure. No, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, when we would see Brendan Mathurin at the U of A, there was no question that he was going to be a star player.
Yeah,
Bellis, a back-to-the-basket type player, and it'd have to be the right fit. There was not a right fit, obviously, in the draft. And,
yeah,
you know, you go through the draft, and when you see Jokic was the 41st overall pick, you just don't know either. There's a lot of here's five takeaways from the NBA draft, and five of them are not true. So you do have to give it some time and see how it works.
It is really – you know, the NBA draft is a little bit like trying to pick quarterbacks. You know, you really don't know – and the college, how they do for a year or two in college doesn't necessarily translate. Some guys are very productive and then they don't translate to the NBA. Some guys are very uneven. I remember when Jaylen Brown left Cal after his first year, very uneven first year. And a lot of people were like, how is this kid the fifth pick in the draft? Right. Mm-hmm. But he did translate. It is very difficult to evaluate, just like it is with quarterbacks.
No, Michael Porter Jr. at Denver,
yeah,
guy with a ton of back trouble, and he's not going to make it. And then I see him on the court for the Nuggets, taking out the Suns. So, no, I think you're right on that. So,
Zach LaVine at UCLA is another. Exactly. He barely played. Russell Westbrook didn't. You know, he left UCLA. He barely played for his first year, and then I think he had one decent year as a sophomore. And you could see there were tons of holes in his game. He was just an athlete. He translated.
Yeah, Lou Dort over at Arizona State was somebody that didn't even get drafted and is now sitting on a big contract with Oklahoma City. He just found the right fit. I think that's a good part of it, too. Look, I appreciate chopping it up with you. Get out of this. If I see you before then, the good news is, before then, which is Las Vegas, if I see you before then, it means we have a media deal. So I am looking forward to that. If I don't see you, I'm good. It just means that Vegas is going to be filled with media talk. So get out of here, and I'll see you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks very much, Brett.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can check out his content. Follow him on Twitter and, of course, his content on sports360az.com. And we're back with more after this timeout. Right, as promised, Eliav Gabay with us for a few minutes on the Mercury, blowing out Vanessa Nygaard as their head coach. They're 2-10. They're not good. A new owner in place. Jim Pittman's been there forever as a general manager. And Eliav has been all over not just this story, but on the Mercury in general since coming on board with us. And did this surprise you?
Not really. When it comes to where it happened in the season, it almost felt like a matter of time. You know, obviously last year I felt like she absolutely earned the chance to come back. A lot of people were calling for her head even last year, but I don't think that's fair. You take what happened with Brittany Griner and the wrongful detainment, and then a bunch of drama between the players on the roster. Tina Chaw is leaving. So many things, and they still made the playoffs, right? So I definitely think she deserved to come back this year. But in this year, obviously, Matt Ishbia comes in as owner. The time starts ticking. You know, there's some injuries, but you can't be 2-10. You can't be in last place. As Jim Pittman said in the statement, that's just not the Mercury standard. And I also think the management knows that they may have made an interesting decision a couple off seasons ago, where you go from going to the WNBA finals with Sandy Brondello. Now you see how great she's doing with the Liberty, and you kind of start questioning things. So I think this was as much a good decision for the organization as it was for Vanessa.
Okay. So there's a lot to unpack here, and I'm guessing that, you know, you mentioned the Tina Charles drama and drama in general. And Skylar Diggins-Smith, there was drama. There was her on social media putting up a clown face even last year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering, Eliav, was there 100% buy-in on the Mercury's front that this was the right way to go? Could it have been, look, we're going through an ownership change right now. We just can't be doing all sorts of things. And we're going to get started with Vanessa. But maybe in the back of their minds, like, oh, I don't really know if this is the right way to go. Do you think there's anything to that, or am I going down the rabbit hole too far?
Well, I do think one of the elements, and perhaps the biggest element, was way beyond X's and O's, was Vanessa's ability to manage stars and these kind of stars. Mm-hmm. You know, she's had experience as a player in the league. She's had experience as a very successful assistant with the Las Vegas Aces. But outside of that, much of her experience came from the high school ranks. Now, as good as that is, and as good as she was, going from that to dealing with Diana Taurasi, Skylar Diggins-Smith, is a whole nother jar of marbles, you know? So I think there was definitely an element, again, for management of saying, I think we may have made a misstep here as far as someone who can really handle these stars.
The fan base, what was their feeling? Because when I would see things that you'd post, the comments that were out there were not positive towards her at all. Like, there was very little tolerance from the fan base towards her.
Yeah, and I don't think that was fair for much of the time. Again, I think last year she got a lot of flack that wasn't really deserved. Again, them making the playoffs without having Diana or Skylar down the stretch, after changing everything with Tina Charles leaving, and then after she got hired, her best player is obviously wrongfully detained. So you got to give her a mulligan on that one, in my opinion. And you don't even have to give her a mulligan. She still made the playoffs. She still did what she was, quote unquote, supposed to do. But this year, it started to become where fans started saying, oh, look, see, look, we were right. And then the piranhas came out, you know. So I definitely think there was an element of it wasn't fair, but then it started to become, you know, come to fruition a little bit.
How about the roster construction? Like, I know it's been early, so you probably haven't had a chance to talk to players. Today they're having their first availability. But is this a sense of relief? Are they going to just say all the usual stuff? Well, it's a tough business, and I'm just here to do my job. Or is there, thank God, we needed a fresh voice, and Nikki Blue is that voice?
So I'm not sure if there'll be a sense of relief between the players or not, or from the players. We'll definitely get a feel for it as we continue. I do expect the business of, oh, it's a business and it's tough and kind of moving on, just to show respect to Vanessa in that process, especially since Nikki Blue was her top assistant. So I would expect probably similar things schematically, but we'll see. As far as Skylar Diggins-Smith, does this affect her returning? Right? Because we know she's been on maternity leave, but we just recently saw her on Mercury legend Bridget Pettis's story, putting up shots. Is that a sign perhaps that she is nearing the return, and maybe the coaching change will help that.
About Taurasi, you know, the hard part for an aging legend is that they're an aging legend. You know, Steve Nash towards the end, if I'm going to use the men's game, and it's completely a fair parallel, it was a hard watch because his body was starting to break down. When you watch Diana Taurasi, I know it's a legend, but you have to have these discussions. Is she still able to do what she's able to do or been able to do?
She is, but as you've said with aging legends, that spurt get shorter and shorter. The right amount of time that you can deliver at that high level gets shorter. On defense, at times she can be a liability. On offense, she can still be Diana, right? But I think What can help is maybe playing her off the ball a little bit more, getting someone like, if Skylar doesn't return, getting someone like Sophie Cunningham in those, I guess, rotations, in those actions with Brittany Griner, and having Diana benefit from the extra space instead of having to hit step back threes these days. She can just hit those threes because we know she still has that, you know? So just, I think, taking a little bit of pressure off of her in that regard, because she also brings up the ball much of the time and those kind of things, can help extend those spurts for her.
What have you seen out of Griner? I mean, she makes the All-Star team. And in my mind, just the way I'm wired, of course she's going to make the All-Star team. It's the WNBA. She's one of the biggest names in the league. And she's been productive when I've watched them play. There's no question about it. What do you make out of her so far on the floor?
Honestly, I think she would have made the All-Star team regardless of her name. Her play out there is still a dominant force, straight up. You just can't deal with her. No matter what you do, she still has her moves. She has a little turnaround J that is just too high for most players to get to, you know. And not only that, she's brought back that glue that we thought could be missing from the team last year. You see that again this year. And it really has felt like it's brought the roster whole. And regardless of the results, we're seeing her slow rise, and that says a lot when she's already an All-Star and she's not at full strength yet. But you've seen that as well, especially defensively, which she is hardest on herself on the defensive end. You've seen that come along as well, leading the league in blocks, you know, for someone who's, again, not back to who she fully was. So I got to say, I've been impressed with her offensive game. And I know that's not where she wants to be yet, if you ask her. But I think she's absolutely earned that starting position on the WNBA All-Star roster.
Okay, they're 2-10. Do they get this thing turned around? What's the date that you look at, or time frame that you look at, where it's, Brad, this isn't going anywhere, because next year's draft is going to be filled with some very talented players. And Tankapalooza, does it need to happen with the Phoenix Mercury? Do they need to just say at some point, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month from now, is Jim Pittman sitting there saying, I have a new boss that I'm reporting to? You know, there's a lot of factors, but I could make the argument of, in the next few weeks, you guys should probably tank because you may have the top pick or two.
Right. And the picks this year, as you mentioned, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, I mean, they can be franchise changers, yeah. Especially yeah. when you have someone like Diana feeling like she's on her way out. Right. But at the end of the day, going with that point, when you have someone like Diana, when you have someone like Brittany Griner, potentially Skylar Diggins-Smith coming back, you just can't tank yet. You can't tank. You got to see what you can muster up, especially when you have those 10 playoff appearances in a row. You just can't let that go so quick. But yeah, I would say probably this next month will be very telling. But after that, if it's still looking bad, perhaps at that point, you should probably go for getting a potential immediate superstar on your team. I mean, look at Aaliyah Boston for the Fever. She's an All-Star, and she has been playing fantastic basketball, and that's not a surprise. That's what you expect from a player like that.
Eliav Gabay dropping knowledge on the Phoenix Mercury. As always, good job. And we're back with more after this timeout.